Welcome to the Mile 99 interview with your hosts, Jessica Harris,
Mike Turner,
and Greg Larkin.
Enjoy this episode. We'll see you on the trails.
See you out there.
See you there.
Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Mile 99 interview. I'm one of your hosts, Mike Turner. And so this is a place to hang out with our friends or like-minded folks in our running community, share our stories, our travels, our successes, failures, our hospital visits, anything that comes up in the day in the life of this sport. It's also a place to get the latest in the local race news, find out what's going on, where you can volunteer, and things you can do. We record live on Facebook and Zoom, one take, no breaks. And unlike your local running groups, what is said here is on the record. Let me record it in case we need it. I'm joined by my favorite co-hosts, Jessica Harris and Greg Larkin. Hey, Greg, how's it going?
Going all right. Just enjoying some late season time here. Just kicking back, taking it easy. Going to be heading up to Pine to Palm on Saturday and doing a overnight ham radio shift up there. So looking forward to that. I've never been to that race. So it'll be a good way to kind of check it out and see if that's on the horizon in a coming year, maybe. But looking forward to supporting all the runners up there. And I've heard that's a really great course. So anxious to see what that's like.
Yeah, it's easy to get around if you need a car. There's several in the parking lot. We can get to that later on.
Nice. All right. I think I've heard that before. Jessica, ha-ha. How are you?
Ha-ha. So funny, guys. You know what? I'm just going to do a little plug for Beer on the Run Pod. They just had Maria on, and they talked about me stealing a car, and I had to go live on social media. And for the record, my co-parent and very best friend, Nicholas Banaszak, stole the car. I did not steal the car. I was there. I did not steal it. I might have heavily suggested for him to take it, but I didn't. So to clear the air, yes, but no. And I'm doing great. My kid's schedule right now is so bizarre. I didn't understand when people told me like having four kids was a lot. I was like, yeah, okay, I guess. But now that they're all older and doing their own things, now I get it. It's like middle school dances, who's doing theater, everyone's doing soccer, all these schedules. And I'm thankful I have very amazing co-parents because I don't know how I would make it work. So I'm doing more treadmill running, which isn't my favorite, but it gets the job done and lets me have a little treat every night. So that's keeping me happy. This weather is fantastic in Northern California, where we had this past weekend, we were in the 70s. And we're only like barely 90s this week. So it's really pleasant and good for running inside and outside. So pretty happy here. Mike, how are you?
Good. So I imagine also with the parenting is there's a lot of organizations asking you for support because you're a helpful mom. So they got every group, soccer wants you to help. You volunteer, bring in a snack, bring cakes. You know, it's like, so you're being pulled a lot of ways, I'm sure, with four kids.
Yeah, because I just can't say no. So PTA for both schools. I did stop doing one fundraising thing, but then the Mile 99 has maybe a fundraiser coming up that I just dove into. And yeah, PTAs and soccer moms and stuff. I love it. I love it. But yeah, it's a lot of scheduling.
Yeah, no, things are going well. And like this weather has been nice. We had some rain last weekend. I think I ran Sunday around Colfax and I had to bring all my rain gear. It was like, it was coming down Sunday morning, crazy, you know, but it's been nice. Yeah, it's been pretty good.
That's great. I'm so thankful you guys are doing good and getting some experiences and you guys did some big things this year. So just cruise. Love it for you guys. I also am very thankful for everyone who has ever donated to us on Venmo for one-time donations or our Patreon. If you're still part of our Patreon, which gosh, we're so thankful. We've had some really loyal supporters. You guys are always welcome to join our post show. And we have a really good post show story this time. So if you hop on our Zoom, we'll get you right over to our post show. And you also get the, you know, extra perks for being a patron. So we thank you guys. If you want to join, it's as low as a dollar. Helps us keep the lights on around here. Super thankful. And I did say we're going to do a little fundraiser. Last year, we did a fundraiser for the Placer SPCA, the Mile 99. We had an interview with the rusty nails when they did PTL. And we got a really sizable donation. So this year we're in the works to plan a December fundraiser that I think everyone's going to be really interested in. So if you're a small business or a race director, and you want to donate to this fundraiser, we're going to do a little silent auction. Please message me. We'll get the word out now and more details coming soon. But I'm really excited that Mike and Greg and me are doing more for our community. So thank you guys for participating. And we've got some good stuff coming up. So I think that's all our Mile 99 news, but I know there's some community news. So what's up, Greg?
Yeah, there's, you know, lots of races coming up. The season is not over yet. And, you know, we've got a bunch of things that we're going to be involved in various ways, including interviewing race directors. So we're going to be doing the Sunset and Cider Trail race, right? Like with the race directors there to talk about that race. That one comes up August or October 14th, which also happens to be the same day as Euchre Bar. So you can either do a nice like Sunset and Cider run, or you can go out and punish yourself in the North Fork Canyon. It's up to you, one or the other, about the same. And so I'm sure that'll be fun either way. And also I've mentioned a couple times, Ben Mitchell, he puts on the Yuba Gold 50K up there in Nevada City, point to point race, which I think is just so cool. I really like the idea of these point to point races. A little more logistic, you know, planning going on there, but just kind of a cool way to just see things in a different way. So that's the prior weekend, October 7th. So definitely check that out. That's on Ultra Sign Up. There's actually a Broken Arrow Sky Race course preview, September 30th, which I was just sort of nosing around Ultra Sign Up last night and looking kind of in the radius and what's going on in the 50 mile radius around here. That one showed up. That looks pretty cool. And then the other thing I just found right before we went on here, there's two really kind of unique races coming up in this very local area, one of which is going to be the Ride to Walk Endurance Runs in Rockland at the Spring Whitney. I think it's the Whitney Springview Whitney Park area there, or down by Johnson Springview. And it's a 100 miler, a 48-hour, a 24-hour, a 12-hour, and a 6-hour event. You can choose which one of those you want to do. And that's September 23rd through apparently the 25th, which is a Monday morning, if you do the 48-hour. So, I mean, I think that's only like 3 miles from my house. So I'm going to have to find some time to go check that out, I guess, only as a spectator, but who knows. Then also, I just realized last night also when I was looking around, there's actually a backyard ultra put on around Granite Beach and Beals Point. So that's going to be happening in late November, November 18th. So if you're into the whole backyard ultra thing and you want to just like push yourself to your absolute limit, go check that out. Single Track Running is putting that on. So I don't think there's been a ton of publicity on that, but it's on Ultra Sign Up. So that also, if you're not in it, just as a spectator, I think would be fantastic to go check that out. And then we've got a bunch of other, you know, regular road races, Buffalo Stampede. You know, there's going to be Urban Cow Half Marathon coming up, lots of 5Ks and kind of benefit runs as we come to the end of the year and all that. So, and of course, Rio del Lago, the big one, November 4th. So plenty of stuff to do. Check out Ultra Sign Up. Again, just, I was really surprised. We just do like a radius around a zip code. It's really cool.
One thing I saw some notifications from some of our local Facebook groups, Hassan and Dave. They have an Urban Cow training program and a CIM. So if you're interested in some of those road races, we have local groups that are hosting events. So check them out.
Awesome. Yeah. And yeah, the mentioning CIM, like a lot of our local trail runners are actually members of the pace groups at CIM too, which is a really cool crossover. So if you're a trail runner and you're sort of like thinking about doing a road marathon for the first time, or maybe you've done it a few times, like it's a great way to connect but still with your trail running community friends, just by getting into one of the pace groups. So just a great community running road or trail. I think everybody's just got like a big high from the season, and it's just a great way to kind of wrap everything up for the year. So check it out.
Thanks, Greg. Got some new races on the calendar for us to share. I really love that. Thank you so much for doing that. Tonight, we have a much anticipated guest joining us. I'm going to brag a little bit. With 39 races on Ultra Sign Up, 6 trophies, which include third at RDL, third at Formidable, third at Waldo 100K, another third at RDL, a first at Overlook 50 Miler, and second at Ruckachuck within the last 6 years. She just closed the loop at UTMB, so congratulations and welcome to the show, Heidi Rounds. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Yeah, everyone, she got in last night. So this is just, she's fresh with stories. But before we get to what happened this weekend, we're going to get a little context of Heidi and where she grew up and where she was born. So let's start there.
So I grew up in Paradise, California, which most people know now because of the fires. And my family is okay. They're still there in Paradise, but that's pretty big part of who I am. I have an older brother and 2 younger sisters. All of us are within 8 years of each other, so super close growing up. Grew up in a really active family, but not runners. We all played tennis, tennis family, but everybody was in sports, basketball. I'm not very tall, so my basketball career didn't last super long, but always active, I would say, is like one of the best ways to describe our family. And everybody still is too. So
were you active like in team sports or just active within your family unit?
Yeah, both. Team sports, I played basketball. I was on the cross country team just in junior high, and then that sort of ended. And then we all played organized like tennis teams and on the USTA tennis circuit. And I played tennis for my first 2 years in college. My brother did as well. My sisters were like amazing basketball stars. So all of us did stuff together and then on our teams as well.
And where did tennis come from? Did your parents do tennis? Do they still do tennis?
Yeah, my dad always loved tennis, and him and my mom would play together for, you know, just for fun and leisure. And then all 4 of us kids got involved in tennis, probably starting like, I mean, as kids, we would all go out as a family, but started to be sort of more competitive about it in middle school. And I personally don't play anymore, but my dad and my brother still go out and play tennis together like several nights a week, which is awesome, you know, because now they're going on playing tennis together for 30 plus years. So it's pretty amazing. Yeah.
That is really amazing, because you do something for that long and you'll have different seasons of being better or being worse or improving here, improving there. So that's a really cool part of their relationship. And so you don't play tennis anymore, but you did when you were little. Were there any other sports that you did that were outside?
I think that tennis was really my main thing. Like I said, I did cross country in middle school. Just because, you know, in junior high, there's not really a lot of sport options. It's like basketball and cross country at school. Yeah. And I was never a soccer kid. I was the only one that wasn't. I was never a baseball kid. My brother played baseball. My sisters played softball, but it just wasn't my thing. I don't like to get yelled at. And I have a hard time with like the super competitive nature. I'm so impressed by people that can handle it, but I'm definitely soft-hearted. So it was a little harder for me to do some of those things. And I think that's why tennis worked really well for me and why running worked really well for me. You have a team, but you're also really reliant upon yourself, and it's not a loud, aggressive sport most of the time.
For totally. Sure.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. I can see that. I mean, big tennis. I've seen some. You're supposed to be quiet during those matches, but they're getting rowdy these days. It's big. But you're supposed to be quiet and respectful. There's that TikTok going around where there's that kid who's the ball boy, and he throws the ball to the player, and he backs up and into the wall too hard, and it like echoes, and everyone's like, shh. Quiet, too loud, you trip, too quiet. So that makes sense. Did you guys as a family do any hiking or skiing or any mountainous activities?
Yeah. So my grandma lived in Truckee and my grandpa lived in Salmon, Idaho. And so I think really a lot of my outdoor adventurous spirit came from those family vacations that we would go on to visit either one of them. When I was 5, I was diagnosed with epilepsy. And so I had seizures as a young kid, and I had an amazing neurologist, but he was very much like, you know, you can't, there's certain things that we just don't think it's safe, right? Because this was a long time ago and less was known, fewer courses of treatment, things like that. So it was like, we don't want you going downhill skiing. We don't want you horseback riding. We don't want you doing, you know, all these different things. So I grew up doing cross-country skiing. And so when we would visit my grandma in Truckee in the winters, we would cross-country as a family, which is very much like hiking or running. And when we would visit my grandpa in Salmon in the summers, we would go into the mountains and we would go hiking and fishing, or, you know, hike down into lakes. I can remember going into Iron Lake and hiking out, and a lot of camping trips and outdoor activities like that.
There's where the mountain thing came from. I knew it had to be a deep somewhere along the trail. Absolutely. So we get through junior high, you did cross country, through high school, and then college. Talk to us about your sports in college. That sounds fun.
So in college, I played tennis for my first 2 years and absolutely loved it. Some of, you know, my closest friends were my tennis teammates. It's super competitive, obviously, once you get to that level. And then when I transferred to UC Davis, UC Davis was Division I. And if I'm just being super honest, I just wasn't good enough to play at the Division I level. So I'm really grateful that I had the opportunity to play college sport for a couple of years. But it was way more competitive once I moved on to that level. And actually, that's when I started to get into running. So I did my first marathon when I was 20. So I had played my first 2 years of college tennis, and that kind of, I was still playing for fun, but it was like, okay, now I have more time. And what are some of these things that are on my bucket list? Well, I want to do a marathon. And so that's when I decided to do it. It was when tennis had slowed down and I had a little bit more time for something else. And I did it with the team and training program. And at the time, Rich Hanna was the team and training coach. So he was like my first long distance run coach, and he was super competitively running. I mean, he's still freaking unreal, unbelievable, amazing, but he was competing like at the World 100K the year that I did team and training with him. And that was like my first introduction to like, wait, what, people run farther than a marathon? Like, I didn't even know that existed. Yeah.
And so to make that jump, it's always interesting to me when people do one sport and then they move on to the next one, because like for me, I was a runner. I didn't think about doing another sport. I still don't really. So for when you are training to do a match for tennis, are you running at all for practice, or is it just, you know, was that your team's punishment was running, or where did you kind of like think like, okay, well, I'm going to run for a long time now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I had always had in the back of my mind that, you know, a marathon seemed like, wow, that's like such a big accomplishment. Someday in my life, I think I want to do that. Mm-hmm. And that someday definitely came a lot faster for me than I thought that it would have. I thought maybe like someday, like many, many years. But when I was playing tennis in college, yeah, we did a lot of tennis, you know, practice was hours and hours a day, but we also did a lot of cross training. And so we were running more and exercising more. And so that was a part of it. And the other thing as I'm reflecting on this as an influence, is I used to work at Gold River Racquet Club, and I had the early morning shift, like open the club at 4:30 AM. And that's when all the runners come to the health club, because they come to go for a run and work out and then go to work. And so there was a lot of people there that would show up early, and I'd kind of start asking, you know, what they were up to. And they were these long distance runners, and Norm and Helen Klein would come every morning. Whoa. And she was like, I was so amazed that this woman was still competing at a pretty high level. And she was an older woman. And I remember being, you know, 18 or 19 working there, and she was setting records in her age group at marathons. And I was like, okay, well, now I'm, you know, not playing tennis anymore. And I see all these people doing this. I'm gonna do it. It's just, you get inspired by the people that are around you, and you see these stories and you're like, man, I want to do that.
Yeah. When you see people, you might not be doing it, but it's impressive to you. And it does leave a mark. Like, anything that we do as humans can be absorbed by someone else. And, you know, it plants the seed, like, I can be a little bit better. So that is a really cool reflection that you have. So you start to do this marathon, team and training. I know that sometimes for some marathons, you can like raise money, or, you know, you're part of the training program. And was there any of that going into that marathon?
Yeah, I did all the fundraising. And that was an experience in and of itself. I am really bad at asking people to donate and do things. It's just not a level of comfort that I have, but it was such a good cause. And then for me, it was also really personal. My college roommate had leukemia, and so there was a big reason for me wanting to do it through the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's team and training program. And it also made it a lot easier for me to like say to people, here's why I'm doing this. Be like, this is for Katie, this is for my roommate, and I want to do something for her and for her family and for people that are going through those experiences. And so that it also really helped me be invested in the training part of it, because it wasn't like, oh, well, you know, if it works out, I can always do another one later. There was a deeper meaning behind doing that race.
Super selfless at a really young age to be about other people. I don't know I was doing that at 20. So that's a really testament to who you are, Heidi. So you get through the marathon, you raise some money. And then what's next for running?
Then you cross that first finish line and you're like, this is so much pain. I am so sore. I'm never doing this again for the rest of my life. And then like 2 weeks go by and you're like, oh, you know, maybe I could do another one. And then more time starts to go by and you're like, well, maybe I can do another one and I can do it faster. So then my next big thing was, I want to qualify for the Boston Marathon. So I'm going to keep doing this and I'm going to work on getting faster and do, you know, getting better, and being a little bit more serious. And I mean, really, I was hooked after the first marathon, and it took me a few tries. But eventually I did qualify for Boston. And I think I did the marathon distance for, I would say, a good 10 years before I moved up to anything greater than that. And I, you know, did one marathon a year. 1 year I did two, but it was sort of like, okay, well, I'm spending 6 months out of the year getting ready for this event, but just trying to do it better every time.
Not everyone has that. That is really impressive. So you qualified for Boston. Did you do it?
I did. Yeah, I did the Boston Marathon in 2010, and it was a fantastic experience, which I would love to do again at some point in time. My mom and my aunt traveled with me, and we spent like a whole week in Boston and did all the things, like went to a Red Sox game, went to the Boston Tea Party site, went to the Cheers bar, and then, of course, did the marathon. And the Olympic trials were there that year as well. So it was like such an exciting time to be there and to see these fast, fast women just crushing it out there. It was really awesome.
The weather in Boston can be barely pleasant or it can be miserable. How was it in 2010?
It was awesome. I mean, I was wearing a long sleeve, but it wasn't raining. It was, you know, pretty ideal running weather. Yeah. It was so fun. Such a good experience. Yeah.
So after that, sometimes when we talk to our guests and they accomplish their big racing goal, sometimes they face a little bit of a lull after, like, I did my thing. I can't, that's what I've been trying to do. And now I did the thing. So what do I do? Do you have any of that? Or were you just like, okay, let's do it again. Let's be better. Or where were you after that?
I know. I'm definitely a type A to the max personality. There are areas of my life that maybe I'm not quite as much that way, but it was sort of like, okay, what's next? And so then I decided that I was going to do triathlons after that. So that was the next thing. And so I started, I got a road bike and started to ride my bike and did a couple of Olympic distance triathlons and then just decided to go straight for the Ironman.
Did you do that?
I did.
Okay, yeah. Great. How was that?
So I did Coeur d'Alene Ironman and, I did Boston in 2008. I did my Ironman in 2010. Got it. Yeah. So in 2010, I did Coeur d'Alene Ironman and it was, again, an amazing experience. I do have to say though, that when I finished that, I really didn't have the desire to do that again anytime soon. And it's been, you know, 13 years later and I'm still not ready to take that on again. It's a different type of training to be getting ready for three sports.
And where were you in your life? Still in school, married, kids, where were you there?
I was not married, no kids, working full time, but didn't have the same responsibilities that I have now, mm-hmm. Which are all, you know, amazing to have, but it certainly makes a difference if you're like, well, I'm not going to get home from work today until 8 p.m. because I have to go for a run and then I'm going to go to the gym and swim. And it's just, it's a full-time job to train for the Ironman and not something that I felt prepared to give up that type of time and effort and coordination. It's way different than like running where you're like, okay, today I only have a short amount of time. I'm going to put my shoes on. I'm going to run around in my neighborhood. You have to know where you're going to ride your bike. You have to have a place to swim. So there's just, for me, there was a lot more logistics that went into it and it was an amazing experience. Super well done races. The Ironman organization is fantastic at what they do. But I haven't been ready to do that again yet.
Yeah. Because life, yeah. We're thankful for the season of whatever we are in to be able to. Yeah. I couldn't even think at this point in my life to even try to train for more than one thing. I mean, you get that. We all get that. Yes. But maybe later our kids are older and they can bring us our stuff.
Maybe. You know? Yeah.
So then you moved on from Ironmans. And I mean, I listed off your race results.
Yeah.
So at some point you got into trail running. When was that?
That was after Ironman. So after Ironman in 2011, I guess, I moved up to Cool. And if you live in Cool, you best be running on the trails because that is what people do. You know, if you don't have horses, you are a trail runner. And so we had some neighbors that lived across the street that were like, hey, you know, my wife is running Western States this year. And I'm like, kind of like, I knew what it was, but I didn't know a lot about it. And hey, do you want to go for a trail run sometime? I'm like, yeah, sure. And so we go for a run and we were running through like the ALT part of the Western States course because it was in the neighborhood. And I got back from the run and I thought, yeah, no, this is like so hard. I could barely breathe. My heart is pounding. Like, how do people do this? And then a couple of days later, like, well, I guess I better go out there again and try it again. And then I signed up for Way Too Cool. And that was my first trail race. And I feel like after that, the rest is history. Really, like it was like, okay, now what am I going to do after this?
Were you training with anyone? Sorry. Were you training with anyone for Way Too Cool? Did you find the running community at that point?
I didn't really know a lot of people in the running community yet at that point, but my neighbor was running Way Too Cool and he was pretty experienced. And so that was pretty great for me because it was like, okay, you know, on these long runs, I have someone to go with, and that can kind of show me the ropes and teach me where the different trails are and things like that. But for the first few years of living up there, I really was just kind of doing stuff on my own or with my neighbor, until then you start to see the same faces around, right? And you're like, hey, I recognize that person. I recognize that person. And then you get a little bit more brave and you start introducing yourself. And do you want to go for a run? And then you start to build your community. And now my running community are my, you know, they're my closest friends, my favorite people. Yeah.
So how was Way Too Cool, your first trail 50K?
It was so hard. I definitely went out way too fast, which I continue to do for many of races for a very long time. Cause you feel so good. And that first part is such a nice loop and it's such a nice downhill. But I think that the sense of accomplishment and satisfaction at the end of those long races, you can't help but feel proud that you endured through something. And I'm not saying that I didn't feel that way after road marathons, but there's a lot more quiet time in a trail race. You know, in a road marathon, especially like CIM, there's people around you all the time. And you get into these trail races and you might be running by yourself for several hours. So it was a different feeling of, okay, I can do this. I did this and I made it on my own to the end. And after that, I started researching like, okay, what do I have to do to get into, you know, Western states? What do I have to do to get into these? And so then you learn like, well, I got to do longer races to get to do the long races. And so you start signing up for those.
Yeah. If we had 2 hours, we could get into, I mean, all these races on Ultra Sign Up. I mean, a lot of podium finishes and there's lots of stories in there, but people are here for UTMB. So we're going to have to rebook you for your old asset and go right into UTMB, because that's a lot to digest on that. That's a whole nother hour if you had time. But before we get into that, I do want to mention one of our sponsors, one of my favorite products, and it's great for UTMB, great for any kind of sandy race, wet race, muddy race. It's our new Instigators by Cotula. And I have been loving these Instigators. I have a couple pair. I have the Renegator and the Instigator. Instigator is the newer one, the trail version. They're based in Flagstaff and they're really a good company. They have the Duralink instep strap on the bottom. So it has a 1,000-mile warranty, has this fabric that's really durable, but yet it's cool and breathable. A real fat zipper, so you can lay it open when they're extremely muddy or your hands are ice cold, and it's a giant zipper. So you don't have to worry about trying to get that little zipper on there. So I've had such a great luck with them. I've used them for several races, muddy races, and they just have been a good product. And Jessica has a pair, Greg has a pair. I think we're all loving them these days. So check those guys out. Right now you can get free shipping on your Instigators. You can get ready for the muddy winter. Get yourself a pair. Go to Cotula, KAHTOOLA.com, Cotula, and then put in the code THEMILE99 to get your free expedited shipping, and enjoy those this winter. Greg, you've been enjoying yours, Greg?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I figure like maybe this winter, you know, when the mud starts and all that, it might be good to try those things out again, see if they're good at keeping your feet a little cleaner, perhaps. But yeah, they were just absolutely indispensable at TRT this year. With that, let's dive right into UTMB. And first of all, just, yeah, thanks again, Heidi. You haven't even been on the ground 24 hours. And here you are. So we appreciate your stamina in another different way than the race, trying to readjust to the time change, 9-hour time difference. That's significant. And so I guess the first thing I wanted to find out is, was this your first time in one of these, in the UTMB series of races? Because there's like even more races this year than I think I even realized. I mean, there's all distances, all types of terrain, team, solo. UTMB is kind of the marquee event, but had you tried any of the other ones prior?
No, this was my first time doing a UTMB event. I had gotten into CCC last year, but then was injured, so wasn't able to make the trip. And then, I mean, somehow was fortunate enough to then get into UTMB, in the following lottery. But this was my first time.
Actually, that brings up a good question. Can you explain for people how you qualify to get into UTMB? Because I know it's changed over the years, and now they have a system with stones. I need to research that a little bit. What was your process?
So I'll do my best because, yeah, it has changed and it is a little bit confusing. So I had done races that were, UTMB qualifying races, and then you earn different amounts of stones for these different races, right? So I had stones from canyons, and I had stones from Javelina, maybe from something else, but I had enough stones. And so then each of the different UTMB races, you have to have a certain amount of stones. So like OCC is the 50K, CCC is the 100K, and then UTMB is like the 100 mile. And so it takes the most stones. So after I didn't get to go to CCC last year, I was like, well, I have enough stones because now I did another canyons. I could put in for CCC again, or I could just go for it and put in for UTMB. So I used all of my stones, and then the number of stones that you have, I think also gives you different chances in the lottery. That's the part that I'm a little unsure of. I'd have to go back and look, but so I put my stones into the UTMB lottery, and then I saw my name was on the list. And I actually was like, yeah, no, I'm not going to do it.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't sign up because I was like, well, I didn't think I really had a chance. And oh my gosh, this is like, it's really like hit me like, oh my gosh, my name got pulled. I have to like buy a ticket to France. I have to train for this like crazy race. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do Javelina again. And then so I didn't sign up, and the date passed to sign up. And then I got another email that was like, hey, we extended the deadline. And I'm like, okay, all right. Something in the universe is telling you like, do it. And friends were like, look, Heidi, you've done Javelina before. And you can go back to Javelina again if you want to. It's so much closer to home. Like, you got into this, do it, go for it. And I had so many people encouraging me that then I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. I have to go for it.
Nice. And when did you find out, or when did they send that second email?
It was just maybe like in January. So you find out in January, and then it was, I guess, maybe like at the end of the month or something like that.
Okay.
Because they do give you a little bit of time to think about it, but I let that time pass because I was like, yeah, yikes, I'm not ready for this. But
at least when you commit, you've got a pretty good chunk of the year to train.
Absolutely. Yes.
That's good. Yeah. For cool. Sure. And so your coach is Cole Watson. Is that right?
Yes.
And did you engage with him? Like, had you already been with him prior, or did you get together with him like after you found out?
So I was working with Cole last year when I was going to go to CCC. So he was going to help me get ready for CCC. And then I got injured. And so it was like, I really spent most of the second half of the year not running last year, riding my bike and, doing as much as I could. So I said, well, I'm going to take a break. And then will you train me for Canyons starting in January? And then I'm going to do Javelina after Canyons. So we were training for Canyons, and I was thinking I was then going to move into Javelina. And then I said to him, you know what, change of trajectory here. After Canyons, I'm going to move into UTMB. And he was like, I couldn't be happier that you made that decision. Like, this is going to be so much fun.
Nice. So, well, yeah. For anyone that doesn't know, I mean, Cole, marquee name in the area here, M9 at Western States this year, golden ticket entry to that. OCC came in 14th, I guess. Fantastic watching him just have a just standout year. So I think you got some good advice from him, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
And he's been to UTMB in those races like multiple times. I think he's done CCC and some other stuff maybe over there.
Yeah.
So he's got the experience. So it's great to have somebody, because I got to imagine, like, this is pretty daunting. As you said, you know, you initially didn't want to commit to it, but something told you to do it and you did it. And all right, let's spoil it. You finished. And that's amazing. On your first attempt, somewhere in the neighborhood of 41 hours. Is that right?
42 hours, 41 minutes.
Okay. All right. I knew there was a 41 in there somewhere. Yeah. All right. So fantastic result. We'll talk about, the amount of how difficult that is, because I can't even imagine. But there's a whole bunch of logistics here. I mean, it's one thing, I think, even to just fly from the East Coast to Europe, but the West Coast, to me, it's just that much longer. It's just a bigger time change. How do you plan for that? How did you decide, like, how much time to take, the adjustment period, dealing with the time change, and all those types of things? Like, how was it planning all that stuff? Not even talked about the training part.
Yeah. So I am a high school teacher at a public high school. So I am working right now. And so a lot of my logistics was just around how much time can I really take off and be away from my students. And I had planned to try to take off the least amount of time possible, because my job is really important to me. And I mean, I'm leaving behind 90 of these high school kids who are there, you know, for a limited amount of time every day to get an education. And so I also, though, felt really lucky that my school and my district office was willing to work with me. I mean, they were excited when I told them that this is what was happening, and they're like, okay, we'll work with you. But I could only take 6 days off of work. So then I planned around that. And my goal was to use all of that time really before the race so that I could get there, enjoy the whole, all of the sort of festival of running that was happening there, and that I would have the most amount of time possible to adjust to the time change, instead of getting there and then spending time after. I wanted to be there for the event. So my plan was get there as soon as I can and be there for as many days as possible before the race. I knew that I wasn't going to be able to, you know, obviously train on the course because you're tapered by that time. But I figured if I was there, I could just at least sort of get a lay of the land and enjoy all of that. But yeah, planning how that was going to work. And I have an 8-year-old son, so figuring out like how to do all of that. And he stayed home with his, he stayed with his dad during that time, or with grandma and grandpa. But figuring out how do you balance all of those things, it was quite a task to sort of just make all the pieces come together.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And there were a number of people. We have one of them as a guest here, Joe Steinmetz, also a finisher. Great to see him on. He was in the race with you, and I was tracking you, and you guys were pretty close to each other towards the end there, which was really cool to see. And then Craig Thornley and Lori Thornley were out there, I know, kind of bopping around the course. Your significant other was there, Taylor, who we've talked to. And forgive me if there were other people as well, but did you feel like you had enough kind of like support? I mean, there's no pacers. There's so many people in the race, but were you still like feeling good about, you know, seeing people and getting the support you needed?
It was amazing. I mean, before we even went, Joe, who is on here and who had a fantastic race, was such a student of the race and so generous with all of the information that he had, sharing spreadsheets with me. And I actually had screenshots of the spreadsheets on my phone so that when I was leaving places, especially when I had gotten really tired and wasn't really like sure what it was saying on the signs and stuff like that, I could look at my phone and know, okay, this is the climb that's coming up. This has how many feet it was. So I had a lot of support from him going into the race. But then, like you said, Craig and Lori Thornley were there and they were crewing Joe. But Joe and I were close enough together that I got to see them at all of the crew aid spots from Coromayer, the halfway point, all the way until the end. And I wasn't sure that I would see people. So when I saw Craig and Lori for the first time in Coromayer, I was so excited. It was like the best thing ever, such like a spirit booster. They both gave me a big hug and it was like, okay, game on, like I'm ready to go. And then they would just every time say, okay, we'll see you at the next one. We'll see you at the next one. And when I was really exhausted, you know, in the middle of the second night, and I had come into one aid station and Craig was there, and he actually was in the aid station able to help me because Joe was arriving soon. I said, Craig, I'm nervous because it took me, you know, 6.5 hours to do the last 15K. And if that's the pace that I'm averaging, I might not make it. And he just said, you've made it through the hardest part of the night. This is the hardest part. The sun is going to come up soon. He went and got me a cup of coffee. He filled my bottles, put them back in my pack, you know, eat some cold fruit. And he was like, no, you've got this. And he gave me a big hug and I walked out. Joe was walking in. Lori was out there and she was like, you have a look of determination on your face and you're going to do it. Just keep going. And we're going to see you at the next spot. And then at the next spot, Taylor was there and I wasn't expecting that. And that was at Valor Scene, the last aid station that your crew can be at. So 7 a.m, you know, I haven't seen him for 2 days because I've been on the trails and it's not easy for your crew to get, you have to have a bus pass and you have to time the buses. And it's a lot, you know, especially if you're new to it, like we were. So he actually ran from Chamonix to Valor Scene so that he could see me there and crew me before I left for the last part of the race. And so I really felt like I had an incredible amount of support. And it was really fun. Like when Joe and I were, you know, coming in and out of the aid stations close together, because then at the end we were seeing each other a little bit and that was really fantastic. And when you leave Valor Scene, for me anyways, it was 7 a.m. and I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make it. And it was incredible to have those people there helping along the way.
Nice. Yeah. Well, so for any, and we kind of alluded to it, but just to make it very clear, 6 p.m. start, you're going fully into the night. Everybody is. And then if you're a super fast person, you might not have to go into the second night, but most of us are going into the second night, two full nights of darkness. I mean, that's just got to be rough. I can only imagine the fatigue and just being on your feet for 42 hours. I mean, I just had a 32 hour TRT and I was hallucinating. Couldn't believe, did you have any issues, especially too, with just the altitude? And the other thing I wanted to ask you about was the fact that we had such a snowy winter. I couldn't train up at Tahoe like I normally would for TRT. And like, did you get any altitude acclimation prior to the race?
My last big weekend, Taylor and I went out into the Yosemite backcountry. And so we did 2 days out there where we did, you know, like 26 miles the first day, spent the night on the trail, and then 25 miles the second day. So we did, I think, 3 passes at a little over 10,000 feet on that. And UTMB doesn't get up quite that high. So I think that was really helpful. And that weekend actually was also super technical trails. And I knew that UTMB was hard, right? I don't think I knew exactly what to expect at all, but I knew that it was going to be extremely challenging. I really was not expecting that the downhill was going to be as technical as it was. And so I'm really grateful that I spent that last weekend of training in the backcountry, because at least I did a little bit of that, because what we have in Auburn is amazing and wonderful and I love it, but our trails are not super technical. So I did spend some time going out to like Italian Bar and Mumford Bar and some of those places higher up out of Forest Hill, because they're steeper and more technical than the ones that we have closer to home. But we still don't have climbs that are 3,000 feet in 3 miles. We just don't have that, you know?
Yeah. Totally different beast. And on top of that, you're carrying mandatory gear. Yes. And not only mandatory gear, but as I understand it, they activated the cold weather kit. Is that right?
So we were lucky. We didn't have to have the cold weather kit.
Oh, you didn't. Okay.
But you're right. PTL, TDS and MCC all had to have their cold weather kit. So they had additional mandatory gear. Mm.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're carrying, I'm guessing, more than you typically would on even like a backcountry trip into Yosemite, or was it about the same? Like, did you feel like that was, were you in a place where you felt comfortable carrying that much stuff?
I think that my backpacking trip really helped out with that because, you know, that trip, my pack was a lot heavier because I had like a sleeping pad and a sleeping bag and carrying all of your food for 2 days. But for sure, like no other race I've done in my life, do I carry rain pants and regular pants and a long sleeve and a rain jacket and 2 headlamps and 2 extra sets of batteries and a self-adhesive bandage and myself, you know, there's like so much and you're like, what the heck? But I was grateful to have the extra layers because it was cold at night. And so there's a reason that they want you to have all that stuff. And I didn't have to use all of it, but I used a lot.
Oh yeah. I mean, I can imagine in the second night, especially as you get so tired and you're slowing down and you're slowing down your body, you just can't generate the heat, you know, that you normally would, and just getting all that stuff on you. It's got to be
a lifesaver. Yeah. I was thankful to have the gloves and the jacket and the buff and all the things.
Yeah.
And at first you're like, I'm not going to need this. I've run 100 miles before. I've ran at night before, but it's a lot different to run 2 nights in the mountains.
Oh yeah. Oh,
yeah.
And what were the aid stations like? I mean, are we talking like just full on gourmet, or, I mean, I know that's kind of the stereotype or whatever, you know, being in Europe, but what was it? What was the experience like?
No, it is so interesting. It was like a charcuterie board. You know, you come into the aid station and there's platters of salami and ham and cheese and French bread and different types of crackers. And at one aid station, they had a huge cheese and blueberry tart that was like massive. There's bowls full of dark chocolate. And yeah, it was so interesting. And I mean, I had like, you know, to start what I wanted in my pack, but I had made the decision that because I wasn't having like for sure having a crew, that I was just going to have to rely on what was there. And never in a million years though, did I think that I would be eating cheese sandwiches and dark chocolate at aid stations, but I did. And it worked.
Mm-hmm.
It worked and it was great. But it's not like what we experience or expect here. There's no gels, there's no Cliff Blocks, there's no M&Ms, there's no potatoes or stuff like that. So, that was something to get used to, but every aid station was the same. Like, so that's one thing. It was consistent. Once you saw one, you knew like, okay, this is what's going to be at the next one as well.
Interesting. And so did you have any stomach issues, not just because of that, but just in general, the altitude, the duration or anything, or was everything kind of good the whole time?
I didn't. And for me, that is amazing because I feel like that is one of my biggest downfalls in these races is there's always a period of time where my stomach is a mess and I didn't. So maybe I need to eat more bread and cheese and chocolate in my life. I mean, what could be better?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And so I understand also like you and I guess everybody maybe that participates in any of these races have to carry insurance as well, like supplemental insurance. Is that right?
Yes. That was something that sort of like happened later. I didn't really, you also have to sign up for when you're going to go pick up your packet. Everybody doesn't just go at the same time, which makes sense. There's so many thousands of people going. And so before I could sign up for what time I was going to get my packet, I had to submit my insurance policy, but they actually have like a UTMB insurance policy. Like it's specific for the race so that it will cover you in all 3 countries because you're in France, Italy and Switzerland during the race. And so they've made this specialized policy that you can purchase and it's good for a year. So maybe I'll go back to use my insurance. I don't know. but it covers you in case anything happens while you're out there. And it's really interesting because there's helicopters regularly flying around like on top of the mountain because there are climbers and hikers way up high at like 15,000 feet on Mont Blanc. So helicopters are a pretty regular thing out there. So you just have to get yourself the coverage so that if something happened, that you would, you know, have the help that you need.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, just looking at the terrain, it's like you said, I mean, it's we have some amazing stuff around here all through California, you know, national parks and Yosemite and all these things, but it's just, it's another scale over there, it looks like. So daunting, but doable, it sounds like. So it sounds like you just like nailed all the different, waypoints to get to it and got it done. One thing I'm curious about, you know, and I have not hit my limit where I will at some point, I'm sure, in some races, I slow down to the point where I'm like, I have to just lay down for 5 minutes or 10 minutes. Did you ever just like sit down and just take like a quick nod off for 5-10 minutes or anything? Or did you just kind of just keep trying to stay on your feet the whole time?
I stayed on my feet. I made a promise to myself before I arrived at the race that when it got hard, I was just going to take one more step. And so that was really my mantra in my mind, is just one more step, one more step. And it hurt, you know, my quads, I'm not going to lie, they were exploded by like mile 65. And so the downhill, it hurt. It was hard. It was steep, and it hurt really badly. And I tried for a long time to like tell myself things like, oh, it doesn't hurt. You know, all the self-talk. Oh, it feels good. Oh, you like the pain. It's great. It's your favorite thing. It keeps you going. Oh, you're walking on clouds. And then after a while, it was too hard to really convince myself of those things. So I just kept saying just one more step, just one more after that. And to be honest, I was a little bit afraid if I sat down or laid down that I would stiffen up too much to really keep going. And so I mean, you really can make it if you just keep moving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you have any kind of like standout mental kind of just super dark place? And if so, like, how did you get out of it? Or were you able to just kind of use that mantra the whole time and not really go to that super dark place?
I don't feel like I ever went to a really dark place. I really, I feel like I had thought a lot about that beforehand. And I really had that mantra in my mind. And I was thinking about, all the people that I knew that were watching from home and supporting me. I was thinking about my son and how I want him to always think that he can do hard things. I was thinking about my aunt who absolutely loved France and would have loved that I was doing this. I was thinking about my grandma and grandpa and how adventurous they were. And you just keep these positive thoughts in your mind. And it definitely went to places where it was like, oh, I really can't wait to be done. It's going to be really great when I'm finished. But it was never like, I can't do this anymore. It was like, okay, it's getting harder and it's going to get harder, but you're going to do it.
That's awesome. That actually, it reminds me a lot of my TRT experience, because I went into that severely undertrained, very nervous, but I think just telling people about it ahead of time and then thinking about all the people I told and like, I don't want to go back and tell them I didn't finish. Like, I really don't want to do that. So just kind of keep putting one foot in front of the other. I think that helps a lot. And maybe that's something other people can use as a motivator. So fantastic finish. I know we're coming to the end of the hour. I got a couple more things to talk to you about. But I got to ask you, is this going to happen again? Or is this a one and done situation?
So funny. So we talked about that at dinner the night that we were done. And I thought, you know, it's too soon. I can't decide, but 1,000% I would love to do it again.
Really?
Maybe in some time, because it's a big thing and I would really love for my son to go with me and for family to be there. So the timing has to be right. I don't want to do another big trip without him. But it is for sure something that I would love to do again.
Oh, that's
highly
awesome.
Recommend if you ever have the opportunity. It's
Seeing the images. I mean, I definitely am thinking about that. And I have like few old generations of my family that came from the Geneva area. So it'd be a pretty cool connection to make there.
Yeah.
Cool. Congrats again. And I just wanted to kind of wrap up here because we have a couple of other things that, we had you sort of fill out when we were filling in having you fill in the questionnaire, and just in terms of advice to new runners and some things that you're excited about. Do you want to just take a couple of minutes just to chat about some of those real quick for anyone that's new to the sport, maybe?
Oh, gosh. I don't remember what I said, to be honest, but I'll tell you what I think. And hopefully it's the same thing I said. I think it's really all about, I guess maybe it's not that I don't want to say the same things, but I think this experience taught me a lot doing UTMB. If you want to do something and you believe in yourself, you will do it. Right. So I think that's my biggest advice to people is to go for it and to believe that you can do it. And the other thing is that the trail running community, and now I know like worldwide, is the most amazing and supportive community. There wasn't a lot of conversation because people don't all speak the same languages, but everybody was supporting everybody out there. So if it's something that you're interested in, you just start slow. You know, I'm a high school teacher, like I said, and my students are like, that's crazy. I could never do that. And I just tell them, I didn't start out doing this. It's taken me 20 years to get to this point. So start with a mile, start by walking a mile, start with a half a mile, like whatever it is. And then you add a little bit and a little bit. And as long as you're loving it, you know, you keep going. And for me, I love it more now than I ever have before. So I feel like that means I'm doing it right.
Yeah, I love that so much. And you know what? Not everyone's going to love 100 miles, but whatever you're doing and you're moving your body and exploring and doing something out of your comfort zone is the right move, being adventurous and staying curious. So I really love that advice, Heidi. And we've already been here an hour, so we're going to do a quick wrap up on this show. But before we go, we have our famous rapid fire questions. They're a little silly, but we want to know, Heidi, are you ready?
I hope so.
Road or trail?
Trail.
What's your favorite post-race meal?
Salad.
Heidi.
There's Heidi. So much sugar when you're running. Like, I just want a salad and French fries.
Okay. That's an acceptable answer. I thought you were going to say dark chocolate and cheese bread or something.
Maybe not.
Do you have a bucket list race or event?
Western States.
May the odds be ever in your favor this
Thank
year.
Thank you.
And most controversial one. But we have to ask, cats or dogs?
Dogs.
That was quick. Greg, did you know this about Heidi?
I'm sorry.
Well, thank you.
It's all good.
Okay.
They're four legs and furry and all sweet. We love them all. Heidi, thank you for an hour. What do we have coming up next? All right, guys. Next week on a Tuesday, we're going to have Tim Tollefson on. We're going to get to know him a little bit more intimately. And we're going to talk to him about the Mammoth Trail Fest that's going on. And hopefully we can bring some Auburn love up to that race for volunteering or running or participating. So we're going to talk next Tuesday. We'll keep you guys updated on our social media. If you're watching us and not following us, or even listening to us and not following us, we're at the Mile 99 everywhere. Instagram, Facebook, we have our Patreon, which I forgot to mention. We got a new Patreon today. Her name is Judith Edwards. I believe she's a friend of the guest tonight. So thank you so much. We appreciate everyone from summer and fall. We had a huge amount of support this summer and fall. So we really thank you guys so much through Venmo, checks in the mail, my goodness, and our Patreon. Thank you guys so much. If you're a patron, hang on, or if you're listening to the podcast, go over to our Patreon and watch our post show. But we're going to wrap up here. Thank you guys for being here. Thank you, Heidi, so much. Mike and Greg, we'll see you on the trails.
See you on the trails.
Bye, Heidi.
Bye. Thank you.